Thank you. I'm glad to be here. It's always a joy to come to East Tennessee School of Preaching. I've been here many times over the years. Not too many weeks ago, I was here for a one-day lecture, and I remember that day for many reasons. One of them is I caught the worst cold I've ever had in my life, and took me about 6 weeks to get over it. I hope I don't do that again today, but I got rained on and stomped on and I don't know what all else, so I was hoarse for a good long while. Don't think that's going to happen today, though, because I'm going to leave shortly after this. Today's my wife's birthday. She's given me very strict orders about being home in order to celebrate her birthday tonight. Incidentally, I didn't know we had some more grandchildren. I only knew of five, and now I know I have eight, so I don't know which family of the three has them, but I'll maybe find out when I get home. So you never know what's going to happen when you come to Knoxville. All right. Good to be together. Look forward to many, many good times together with you in the future, Lord willing. Must have been a real night. Must have been an extremely interesting night. There are some other nights in the Bible that I've thought about. You think about the night when our Lord prayed and the next day appointed the 12 apostles. I wonder how much those 12 men understood the significance of what was going to happen after that night. Or then you think about the day of Pentecost and the night that followed. The night before, those 3,000 or so who were baptized had no earthly idea of what it was to be a servant of Jesus Christ. But when the sun went down that day, they were members of the church, and they had the happy privilege of serving Jesus Christ as Lord. And that must have been a night to think about. And through that long night, no doubt they must have thought of many things. Well, on this night that we are going to think about for a bit, there had been a world of preparation. And these folk, however old they were, had waited all of their lifetime. And they did not even then begin to understand what all this was going to mean. Stephen said that the time drew near when the promise of God was to be fulfilled. No doubt many of the Jewish people were thinking of things from their particular standpoint, making bricks without straw, dealing with the hurt that came from the mistreatment that they had received. Many perhaps were contemplating what impact these nine preceding plagues would be having on the Egyptian people and particularly Pharaoh. And all of this now is going on from the human standpoint. But from the standpoint of God, this night had been anticipated hundreds and hundreds of years before. The plan of God. On this night, the people were going to follow the instructions God had given through Moses. It was to be on the first month, beginning on the 10th day and culminating on the 14th. This was the beginning for them, beginning of a new dimension of what it was to belong to God. They were told that they were to take either a goat or a lamb, keep it up for the specified times. And then on the night that we're thinking about, in the evening, the lamb was to be slain, the blood was to be drained into a basin, and then there was to be a very solemn moment when apparently the head of the family would take the hyssop and sprinkle that blood. And he would tell all the people, now you stay in this house tonight. Don't you go out. Don't leave. God is going to pass by. And God is going to bring havoc to the firstborn of Egypt. But he'll spare us. I don't know how well they understood that. But it must have been a moment of great interest. And then they gather for the meal. The roast lamb, the unleavened bread, the bitter herbs. They were to be in haste. They were to be equipped to leave. Shoes on their feet, staff in their hand. All is in readiness now. Imagine the preparation that had been going on. Was Moses telling them, do this and do that, as each of the plagues in an ascending order became worse and worse and worse? We'd like to know that. But now the night of nights has come. And at midnight, there is a cry throughout the land, the firstborn of Egypt, even to the house of Pharaoh. God has smitten them. And hurry now, it'll soon be day. Let's finish all of this. And then as the early morning begins to come, away they go. And from that day forward, until the coming of Jesus Christ in fullness, no Jew would ever forget that. Be more important than the birthday. More important than the marriage day. More important than anything. Because God had brought Israel out of the land of Egypt and had begun guiding them to the land of promise. And each year, they were to assemble together and remember that this night, God had delivered his people, had made them in a special, unique sense his own. And it must have been something along that same line that Jesus thought about and perhaps talked about on that night of his observance of it with the disciples before he was captured by Roman authorities and then went through his trial and his crucifixion. And this night of nights, what about it? Two or three things that come to my mind as I think about it. One is, God had a plan to deliver Israel and bring Israel into the land of promise. It's very interesting to study in the Bible the accounts of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and Moses. We read about them in these passages in Exodus. We read about them in Psalm 105. We read about them in Acts chapter 7. We read about them in Hebrews chapter 11. They are great men of God. And in their lives, God acted in such a way as to demonstrate his will was being carried out. They did not know the end of the thing, but God knew the end of it from the beginning. And so in some ways, these men, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, and even Moses, they were grasping for the understanding, trying to make the future clear. But God knew all along. That was his plan. I wonder sometimes how it will be for you and me and all the others of the earth that are redeemed when we finally are privileged of God to live with him in heaven. I know that we read the verses now and we study the passages and we're thrilled by those great thoughts. But then there will not only be what we have known in anticipation, there will be that reality. And we'll be able to look back as best we can at our own gropings in a sense. And then we will know that the plan of God has worked. And we are blessed far beyond anything we could possibly imagine. Yes, Israel had to make bricks without straw. And we find ourselves sometimes thinking we have to do the same. But just beyond the shadows, there is a plan of God. And someday, by His goodness, we'll know that has worked in our behalf. And then secondly, there is the thought of God's promises. God's promises. Did you ever wait for Christmas to come when you were a youngster? Now, what about your birthday? Or, as in my case, often when school's going to be out. That meant you go barefoot and go fishing. I can't wait. Oftentimes, I'd want to take a break, you know, about halfway through. Teachers didn't much like that. Mama didn't much like it. Daddy didn't much like it. I did. But the promise, God made a promise. One of our earlier speakers talked about the covenant of God. Abraham was told about that promise. And God said to Abraham, I will bless you. I'll make your name great. I'll bless him that blesses you. I'll curse him that curses you. And I'll make of thee a great nation. And in thy seed shall all nations of the earth be blessed. I don't know how much Abraham understood about that. But whatever he didn't understand, God had made a promise. He said, I know God will keep his promise. No doubt in Abraham's mind, God made the promise he's going to keep it. And then Isaac, same promise. Jacob, same promise. In the closing days of the life of Jacob, he must have reflected a great deal on that. You read the last couple of chapters of the book of Genesis. He was no longer wanting to be the supplanter and the trickster. He was a man of faith. And he knew that God had made a promise, and God was going to keep that promise. And all of the old tricks of the supplanter, long, long behind him now. And he's confident the promises of God. And then that very beautiful episode of his blessing of the sons of Joseph and the crossing of his hands and all of that. Now he's become convinced of the promise of God. And then Joseph. Even his own brothers turned against him. But somehow he knew enough of God to be faithful. And the moment would come when Joseph would affirm his faith in the promise of God. Think about the bones that were going to be taken out of the land of Egypt. They could have said, oh, well, these old bones, we don't care about them. After all, they're all dead and gone. Not so. Whatever may be the haste, before we leave, we're going to take the bones and we'll carry them to the promised land because God promised and we believe it, and these men died in faith and they are going to have their bones placed in the land of promise. We ought to learn something about that, promises of God. It may be that God waits a long time to answer according to our request. But God said, I'll hear you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. I will be your God and you shall be my people. You can come to the throne of mercy and grace to find grace to help in time of need. And lo, I am with you always. even unto the end of the world. Go through a chapter or a book of the Bible one day and think of the promise or promises in that one chapter. And then you claim that. That's mine. It was said of old brother C.R. Nickel that one day he was walking down one of the streets of, I believe, Dallas or Fort Worth or wherever. And he said, "This is my father's. It's my father's." Talking about the building. This belongs to my father. And people said, "Why, you're foolish, man. It's so-and-so." He said, "No, my father's God. He owns all of this." Well, they laughed at the old fellow. He was the one that was wise. They were unwise. He believed in the fatherhood of God. And he believed in the promises of God. And we ought to claim as a birthright the privilege of being the children of God and claim every promise in the New Testament that speaks to God's plan for the care of our lives now and the care of our souls eternity. In the third place, there is the blessing of the mercy and grace of God. But that mercy and grace of God was mediated through the instructions that God gave. I'm sometimes struck by strange things that people do. I know that no one is ever going to be struck by any strange thing I do, because I don't do strange things, like losing my pocket knife or locking my car with my keys inside. I don't do things like that more than once or twice a week. But other folks do strange things. Even members of the church do strange things. One of the strangest ones that folks are doing now is talking about grace alone and faith alone. Don't understand that. Can't imagine how anybody that's been taught well enough from the Bible to become a Christian doesn't understand the mercy and grace of God avails through submission to the commands of our Lord Jesus Christ. Can't understand that. And we can talk about Acts 2:38 or Mark 16:16 and so on, and they just kind of smile and say, "Well, that just works salvation." Let's go back to that night of nights. What if the Jewish people had decided that a bull would have been just as good as a lamb? "We don't have a lamb. Or it's too difficult to get one. Let's just kill a bull or a dog." Be all right, wouldn't it? Well, what about the blood now? Couldn't we just sprinkle it out in the yard? I mean, blood's blood, you know. And I don't see any reason to have to put it on the door. Let's just throw it out in the yard. What about putting the leaven in the bread? I don't like that unleavened bread. It doesn't taste good. Let's just put some leavened bread out there to eat. What about having beef and carrots? What about having something we like to eat better than these old bitter herbs out here? And besides, this sand is hot. I'm going to go barefooted. I know God said to put my shoes on, but I don't see any sense to that. And I don't see what difference it makes to God whether we are in haste, ready to leave or not. There's not a Jew anywhere in the land of Israel today that would think that way, and there's not one in the time of Moses that would have thought that way. They would have said, "Now look, don't you understand? God said to offer this lamb, to sprinkle this blood, to do all of these things. Well, you just believe in doorpost salvation, don't you? No, I don't believe in doorpost salvation. I believe in salvation by the mercy and grace of God in submission to what he said to do about the doorpost. Well, then you believe in lamb salvation. No, I believe in salvation by submission to the will of God. Now, people get strange notions in their minds. But on a night like that, to the people that had waited all of their lifetimes and remembered their parents and grandparents had waited too, they'd do it just exactly the way God said do it. Don't you know that that's what you would have done if you'd been back there? And if one of your sons, or even your son-in-law, had started to do it wrong, you'd have had to say, wait a minute here. You're not going to frustrate the grace of God by acting presumptuously. Now, folks, I believe can see that. And if they can see it there, they ought to be able to see it about Jesus. And the fourth thought, in all of this, there was not only the blessing that God had in mind to Abraham and his seed. There was the blessing that God had in mind for you and me through Jesus Christ. There was then a kind of foreshadowing of the coming of Christ here. Even the words that are used in reference to the sacrifice of Christ, drawn from the words that have to do with this Passover. We read in Exodus 12, 13, 23, and 27, I'll pass over. That Hebrew word is Pasach. The noun is found, same chapter. And when you come to the New Testament, the word Pascha has to do with the Passover, and then it has to do with the sacrifice of Christ. I don't believe that's accidental. I don't believe God just waited until Jesus came and scrambled around in the Old Testament and found a word. God wasn't guilty of proof texting. God put into the text a truth, and that truth had greater meaning than even the people of Israel on that night of nights could understand. But we can. And we can see that the blood of Christ that was offered was in many ways like the blood that was sprinkled on the doorpost and the lintels. It's the means of redemption. And that was by the grace and the goodness of God. And the centuries go by. And then our Lord is crucified, and the blood is shed. And that blood reached back to bring to culmination the forgiveness of the sacrificial system in the Old Testament to the faithful Jew. And it reaches forward from that time to make possible salvation for you and to me. Because on that cross, all of the sacrifices, the types, the shadows that God had brought about looked forward to our Lord. And from that time until now, and on to the end of the world, there has been and there will be the blood of our Lord Jesus Christ. And then perhaps in one of the most, I think, remarkable passages, in Galatians chapter 3, inspiration said, and if you be Christ, then are you Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. That's that promise of God back in Genesis 12. That's Abraham. That's Isaac. That's Jacob. That's Joseph. That's Moses. That's the prophets of God and all of the unfolding of God's promise. And that becomes operative in your life and mine When we believe in Jesus Christ and are baptized into Christ for remission of sins, and if you will, the dawn breaks of the day following our becoming children of God, and it's a new world. Not the same world in so many ways. Oh, I know we live at the same address, maybe have the same job, have the same wife, husband, children, same car. But just as that nation of Israel, the day they left Egypt, knew they were in a new dimension of God's plan in their own lives, so we too are like that. And the more we study these Old Testament passages and truths, the more we realize that the God that we believe in has planned and promised and provided salvation. And even at best, we are like children struggling with a great load, trying to fully see it and fully understand it. This matter then of the Passover, one of the great and marvelous things of God's redemptive plan. Let me close by mentioning something that I think will perhaps illustrate the point. Years ago, one of the brethren down at Oak Grove near Dukedom said, "I think you'd enjoy reading some of the books of Jesse Stewart." I said, "Who is Jesse Stewart?" He said, "You'll like to read him." So I got a book, checked out that very afternoon, and I started reading that book. It was Thread That Runs So True. And I started reading it. I preached that night, drove home to Henderson, said howdy to Miss Jean and the kids, and I said, "I've got this book I want to read." The next morning, about 3 o'clock, I finished that book. I was weeping at the joy of that book. I sat down and wrote him a letter. He wrote back. We exchanged letters. And then 2 or 3 years later, I wrote, "I'd be in a meeting nearby and want to come visit." Fine. So one morning, 9 o'clock, I'm down at the hotel in Greenup, and he meets me. And I get in his pickup, and away we go. And he said, "We're going to go to every place mentioned in the Thread That Runs So True." And if you remember the book, there was the first school where he taught. We went to that school, met the old man that owned the place, went to the old shed where the school had been, went to where he taught and had to fight with a big boy in the classroom, same spot. Went to where they had the contest of mathematics, and on. And at every place, he would stop and tell me the background of it. And what I saw when I was there, at the exact place, it thrilled my heart to go back and think about what had been said in the book. And finally, as the last of the places was visited, I thought, this is a wonderful, wonderful thing that I'm able to go with this man to the very place that I read about in the book. I never forget that day. I think that's something like what it will be when the plan of God has finally culminated in our eternal presence with God. Those Jewish people that left that day following the Passover observance, they lived to see something of it. And the next generation lived to see the fullness of it. And you and I, as we read these words, can see something of God's plan and something of the Lord's plan. But it'll be a great moment when, after that long night that separates from this world to that world has finally passed, and we're in the presence of God. And then we'll look back and say it was God that brought her thither, and we've been blessed. Thank you.